So I'm going to record it tonight because I'm going to say things I've never said publicly before. Actually, Laura knows. I have mentioned some of this to Laura.
Yeah, but I don't know.
But I've never said it in public, and I think you could title my talk either. And both these are misleading, as you'll learn. But they are significant to me. Either my coming out talk or my why I'm not a Christian talk.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, they're not as dramatic as they sound. But I never have said any of this publicly, although I've thought about it for on and off, but a lot over the last 2 or 3 months. And just today I was running and it just seemed as though taking a retrospective view of this meeting and a current view of where I'm at as a human being, it just all came together. So I was pretty excited. Wow. And so let me tell you how I got to the titles. when we started this meeting, and I don't know everyone that was involved, but of course Tim and Jamie Haynes were primary. Amy, my daughter, and Brandon, her friend, were also part of the meeting. Debbie and Gary Gibson were part of the kind of the founding brethren and sistern or something. and I knew Tim, and I really was kind of floating in life at the moment. I think I had just moved up to Cold Creek Canyon. I'm not positive. Maybe not yet. Maybe I still house sitting with people. But I said to Tim, I said, look, I'll be glad to be the unofficial consultant for your group. The original plan was to present the gospel with the least amount of cultural baggage possible. And that was our goal. You know, we wanted to separate the representation of Jesus in the New Testament from what I think Tim and I both thought were gross distortions, you know, that have accrued over time. And in America, of course, has its own special versions of, you know, of the Gospels and of Jesus. So
the best versions.
So we wanted to try to extract, you know, the baby from the bathwater, so to speak. And because we knew that if you leave all the cultural baggage in, it's almost always the choir or the preacher preaching to the choir. You know, it's only, you're not really communicating much with people who have no interest or no faith. So we wanted to communicate with people that either had no interest or little knowledge and or no faith. That was the plan, and I think that was kind of the seed of what I want to share tonight, just about my own personal position, is, I remember one significant series Tim did was, he asked the question, is there an inside and an outside, or is there an us and a them? And he, you know, Tim's approach to the discussions, he tried to keep it open-ended, and I don't think he ever imposed a answer on that. But I think that also kind of helped shape my thinking because I really started wondering, where did I get all these notions for membership? What do I really belong to in the universe? And what does that mean about how I look at people, you know, that I consider inside that division and people that are outside that division? And it all really smelled rank to me. It all seemed like, wow, there's a lot of distinctions being made here that may not be necessary and may not be healthy. So that affected me. Another element that affected me out of our lengthy discussion group, which I think's gone on about 10 years, is that we did a series where we read parables from the New Testament, and those weren't the only favorite sessions we've had. I mean, like, I thought our our time when we each read an episode of someone's life after death experience was really a cool evening. But by and large, those were the kind of meetings that I liked the most when we read the Gospels. And I just loved doing it. You know, I liked the diverse opinions, and I also liked the focus of the discussions. Tim, as everyone knows, finally got to a point where he resigned, and Evan came forward and started leading the group. And I think he's done a great job and probably, you know, unparalleled in terms of having more than enough prepared every time you've come to prepare something. And at the time I said, I'd be glad to keep going to this, but I really feel like my heart's more interested in starting something, you know, where we actually just study the Bible. And Evan said it really well. He said, I understand that, because you were trying to explain it, I think, to Ed or someone else. He said, Lewis wants a group that looks at the Bible not just as one more text that can be deconstructed, but as a text that has some authority and, you know, has some measure of truthfulness that could, you didn't say this, but you could have, that, you know, can deconstruct us instead of us deconstructing the text. So I thought that was a good distinction. I've enjoyed a lot of our meetings. And that brings me up to where I am today. It has dawned on me that 40 years ago, when I first heard about Jesus from my friends in high school, and something was really stirred up in me, and I became excited. And prior to that, I was really almost a nihilist. I was so excited to hear about this Jesus who was invisible, but alive, and had the capacity to change people's lives, to give them joy, to give them a life of love. It really meant a lot to me and excited me. And so I became involved, you know, with people who were praying and people who were reading the Bible. And it wasn't as though, you know, it totally was golden or anything, but it was really exciting. And I felt very much, you know, brought alive by it. What I didn't do at the time, and it just kind of gradually began to happen year after year, at the time, I didn't sign up to join Christianity. I didn't sign up, actually. I just was attracted to this person, Jesus. And that was my only interest. I wasn't interested in, not that these things aren't valuable, but I wasn't interested in church tradition and churches and organizations and really all the layers of theology that are out there. I mean, in its strictest sense, of course, theology, rational talk about God is nice, but those weren't the things that attracted me. It was this message that this particular Jesus had risen from the dead and still could affect people's lives. And that's what I always wanted. And over the years, it just started to become assumed by me and other people that interest was the same thing as being a Christian. And being a Christian put you in a position where you had to defend something huge, that half of the things you're trying to defend you don't even know about. And you're trying to validate this big old historical phenomenon. Whereas I just wanted a walk of faith that kept me in touch with this Jesus. And that's why I have stopped calling myself a Christian, because that label means about as much to me as calling myself an American. I probably am, and people can call me American, they can call me Christian if they want. If people can call themselves Americans or Christians if they want, that's totally fine with me. But I don't derive my identity from that. Although I used to try to derive it from being a Christian. In other words, I've never woken up in the morning and thought, I'm an American. I need to live like an American today. I'm proud to be an American, or whatever that song goes when they're skydiving. But I never have thought about that in terms of American. As a Christian, I used to wake up every day or practice every day and think, okay, I need to live a Christian life. Totally did not ever help me. Totally took me away from what had attracted me to the Gospels. So here I sit. I just wanted to let you guys know that the rest of... I have been less depressed lately just thinking about this than I had been for a long time, because I think I was trying to be something I wasn't, something I didn't even believe in. Christian can mean so many things, and it just is not, it's not meaningful to me. It just means too much. It means all sorts of historical things. And it has all these suggestions of membership inside and outside. And I think I owed it to you all, since we've spent so many discussions together. And we've all been very, I think, respectful of each other. And I don't think I've ever tried to convert anybody to anything, which was one of the rules that, you know, Tim laid down at the beginning. I hope I haven't come across that way. And I know no one's tried to convert me to anything.
I'm trying to convert you to stuff all the time.
But it didn't work. But I did feel like, since we're going to, next week's our last formal meeting with, at least with Evan and Timsey here, that I thought I owed it to you to come out of that particular, to distance myself from that particular generalization, which years past I wouldn't have hesitated to say I'm a Christian. But the more I thought about Christianity, what does that mean to me? Is that what gets me excited every morning when I get out of bed? Uh-uh. Thinking about Jesus, and I just listened to the book of Acts, which was after he had died, so it's, because it's kind of hard to relate, for me to relate to people that knew him in the physical sense. But it's after he died, but he still very much has a presence in the book of Acts, and I love it. Thank you.
Oh. He was touched by your
speech.
That was a good speech. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah. Thanks.
So what do you call yourself?
Well, it's kind of like Paul. What do I call myself? It's like Paul Ricoeur. Similar. He's a philosopher.
Is he French?
Probably so.
R
I C O E U R. He called himself a listener to the gospel. I don't call myself that, but I'm someone who loves Jesus. I might not know him, I might be wrong about everything, but I truly, really love Jesus. And I wanna be a person who looks for him and listens for him for the rest of my life. Until he tells me I'm going down the wrong path. And that would be difficult for that to happen. And that's the scary thing about faith. You can't, if you have a seed of faith, what you would want is for God or Jesus to tell you that they don't exist. I'm only going to take it from your mouth, you know. I'm not going to take it from other people, because why do they have authority to tell me whether or not you exist? But that could never happen. So there is, I mean, that there is a definite risk, I think. However you decide to live, there's a risk of missing the boat or misleading yourself. I just want to be honest about it. And I love being set straight, times in my life when I've been disabused of an error. So I'll be happy to be disabused of my errors, however that shakes out.
Louis, with your tremendous confession of how you feel, I think you're selling yourself short about saying you're not a Christian, quote unquote.
It just, yeah, and that there's a kind of like a moral, ethical lifestyle I think that you're thinking of, or maybe not. But what makes me excited is not being a Christian. That makes me feel like a failure. That makes me feel like I've got this immense task. Christianity lets me down. I let Christianity down all the time. It's just like a zero-sum game. And as I said, I don't have any problem people calling me a Christian. You can call me that. Whatever you want. It's not my driving force.
Except I never think that, you know, to be a Christian, whatever, you know, you want to interpret that as that you have to be going to a formal church or doing things in certain routines that the church says, so to say.
Right. And I certainly don't believe that, but let's just face it. There's all sorts of prisons that we can lock ourselves into. I might be the only person who's interested in Jesus who feels closer to him when I don't call myself a Christian. I might be the only one, but I'm one.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty common.
Yeah,
you think so?
Most people I know.
Really?
I mean, not most people. Lots of people.
I've never met any of them.
You know, Chrissy.
Who?
Chrissy.
She
thinks you're real funny.
Oh, well, she's a good person.
Really?
Invite her over.
She likes NBC. You know, she likes
it. I remember her real well.
She's a bunch of
okay. Well, good. This might show you what an enclosed life I've led.
I think, yeah, the problem with religion is, like you said, it takes away liberty.
Yes, and I know religion has a lot of meanings, too, and can mean really positive things to people. All I can do is speak for myself. I don't want to be responsible for things that I don't even understand or believe in. I don't want to answer for them. I don't want to have an external set of standards that I have to live up to because they always fail me. I always fail them. I want faith. I certainly want faith. I don't want a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Now, I think the irony is, you guys, if you continue knowing me, you'll see more love and more joy in me the more I pursue this path than when I cared about having a lifestyle.
I guess I never knew you cared.
Yeah, I did. But you've seen me bemoan myself, make rules and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
But that's my focus. And I thought, but it's so hard to conform to a lifestyle where the heart of it, the essential ingredient, was not my focus.
Mm.
Why do it? It'd be like being in the army without patriotism or something.
That's like most of the army, isn't it?
Then you'd be a mercenary. But it'd be like being a mercenary and not caring about material goods.
Maybe you just really like fighting.
That would be like being a legalized criminal.
There's always an outliner. So how would Lewis, a non-Christian, define Christianity?
Well, it's just...
Try not to offend any of us.
Christianity is... It's the bundle of beliefs and practices and institutions and people that have in one way or another attached themselves to or counterfeited Christ. So it's a mixed bag. It's Christianity involves all sorts of people that I would love to spend a lot of time with. And it involves a lot of worthy missions. And it involves a lot of other stuff. And that other stuff weighs me down. Makes me feel very heavy.
Do you like labels in general?
No, I don't.
See, there's a problem.
Take, for example... yes, I know, because abstraction's a necessary feat of the mind. But it seems that with really important things, the more specific you can be, the more concrete, the fewer misunderstandings there will be.
Yeah, but see, I like labels partly to betray people's preconceived notions. Isn't it kind of fun to call yourself a Christian and say you don't believe in anything they think Christians
like
believe in?
It's not my style.
Isn't that half the point of calling yourself
What's
a Christian?
What's an example for you? What do you call
example
yourself?
For me? I call myself a Christian. I love that label.
Oh, do you call yourself a Christian?
Yeah.
It's on Facebook.
Well, that
proves it. Wasn't it? Isn't it in your profile?
My profile says I am religious but not spiritual. But I'll tell you what I like about the label Christian is it's the kind of the paradox of being a slave to Christ, or in other words, a slave to someone who sets you free.
That's great.
I just like paradoxical labels.
I think that's great.
Are you a slave to Christ?
Well, I accept the paradox.
You're the God that doesn't exist. Remember that.
I understand that. I think that the word itself is, Christ meant anointed one, and Christian just was the diminutive of that, a little anointed one. And anointed meant somehow endowed with, even though I know you're not into being spiritual, somehow endowed with the presence of God. That was, see, I'm a little example of the presence of God. Totally fine with that. I'm totally fine. I think that's a lot of Christians call themselves Christians, thinking about that. I, however, find that the connection between Christian and Christianity and then Christendom, it just balloons. It just balloons, and it's just too many things to keep in balance in my mind. And it gets my focus off what I love. That's all.
But your Jesus is Christ.
I am Jesus' anointed one.
Your idea of Jesus.
The Jesus you swear to.
The
now.
Jesus that I've always read about in the New Testament.
Is Christ.
Well, was he Greek?
Yeah, he's the anointed one. He does things that average human beings don't do.
And the anointed one is Christ.
Yes.
We're not trying to box you into a label of being a Christian.
No, and I thought about
so
that.
You're gonna wake up every morning and say, I'm a non-Christian.
And that's not my that is not my message. That is not my point. The reason I'm recording this is so I can go back tomorrow and remember what I did say, not what you said I said.
So basically, if I understand what you're saying, is that Jesus is your center now. Christianity being organized is not. Is that right?
Well, that's always been right academically. But that's too much for me to take right now. For Jesus to be the center and Christianity to be the periphery. Life's so short, and I've wasted so much time focusing on so many things that I really don't believe in. I'm just going to focus on what I care about.
How long have you focused on things you don't believe in?
Most of my life.
Really?
Yes.
Did you know you didn't believe in them when you were focusing on them?
I don't know what I've done with my life. It just brought me to tonight. That's all I can say.
Laura, tonight when we leave, take all sharp objects out.
No, I need it until tonight.
We're not done with you yet, Lois.
Dennis is going to make you feel better.
Let me give you an example. Let me tell you one thing that contributed to tonight. I was speaking to a good friend last week, and we were politely, in a qualified way, affirming each other. You know, the polite, qualified, because then it's sincere.
Yeah.
I mean, you tell someone, oh, you're like the best, greatest. That the sincerity factor drops with every superlative. So I told him, and a lot of you know who he is, but I'd rather not mention his name. So I told him, I said, you know, the main way I've changed in relation to your thinking is when I first knew you, I was just a Jeffersonian. And along with that, I had a huge suspicion of government and government efforts, government aid, government programs. And now through knowing you over the years, I see a lot of, I can critique Jefferson himself now with a lot more honesty than I could have. I see a lot of the dark side of people who are suspicious of government, And I see a lot of value to socialization. He said, well, I don't really, don't get me wrong, it's not that I believe in the supernatural Jesus, but I do appreciate Christianity more after knowing you because of the, because of some of the values that it promotes, such as, love and mercy and things like that. When he said that, I thought, eek, this is really interesting because the one thing he doesn't, and it's totally his prerogative not to, the one thing he isn't interested in is really the only thing I really care about. If Jesus isn't alive, I'm just not that interested in Christianity. And he's interested in everything but what you call the focal point. So that helped kind of crystallize my thinking, helped me define my position, which I didn't tell him at the time, but I will tell him.
What do you mean by that Jesus is alive?
What do I mean by Jesus is alive?
You said the only thing you're interested in is, if Jesus is not alive, then you're not interested in anything else.
I'm not interested in anything associated with Christianity.
Yeah, and Laura's saying, what do you mean by if Jesus isn't alive? What do you mean by
if he's alive? A mythological figure, the way Bacchus is, or some Greek, hero? If he was a good teacher who died and the resurrection was, hypothesized and was just symbolic, if the Gospels were edited and re-edited so much that the original companions of Jesus did not get enough airtime to express the fact that he did not rise from the dead. If he did not rise from the dead, I'm not interested. I certainly don't want to worship a peer of mine. If he's just another human, I might respect him and look up to him, but I don't want to worship him. I certainly don't want to worship a fantastic, mythological, hypothetical, fictional character. I only want to worship a supreme being.
What's worship?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what worship is. I only want to pay attention, Kierkegaard said, give absolute attention to absolute things and relative attention to relative things.
Good.
I only want to give absolute attention or at least bring myself to a point where I'm willing to give absolute obedience to someone that's absolutely worth obeying or absolutely worth trusting. Which means I will like all of you, but I will not obey you all and I will not trust you in, infinitely. Because you're not much better than I am and I certainly can't do any of that for myself. I've proven that time and time again.
So where are you going to find your Jesus? In what
world? Well, I'm open to more ways, but where I'm going to find Jesus is in people who have a love for him. That inspires me. Some people who don't know about him, but they still exhibit, his character, I can get inspired by. I get really inspired by listening to the Gospels and a lot of what Paul wrote and a lot of what Luke wrote in the book of Acts. Those are my main sources and people that also rely on those sources. As unfiltered as possible.
So what difference, you had mentioned a couple of things. One of them is about Jesus' character. And then you said you're not interested in Christianity.
No.
But Christianity stand for Jesus.
I'll just focus on Jesus, Dennis. That's going to be my salvation. Other people have other dispositions, temperaments, histories. There might be people that really should just spend a lot of time focusing on Christianity. I'm just not that person.
I don't know. From what I've observed of our little group, what you're describing is our little group.
Yes and no. I'm interested in, well, I think the meetings I enjoyed the most, yes, it was our little group. But this group had less of a, the focus of this group was really a lot broader than what I'm presenting.
Yeah, and we've strayed a lot too. But I don't know if any of us have ever, at least from what I gather you, you think Christianity is, how you define your Christianity. I haven't seen that in this group. If so, we're the most disorganized group of Christianity that walked.
No, but I think, and Dennis, I could be wrong, and it's always dangerous to think what other people might be, how they might process reality, because I don't even know how I process it.
Yeah.
But I think there's a possibility that more of us in this group would love Jesus if not for a lot of the stumbling blocks that have been laid down, the assumptions and the associations that have been laid down historically by Christianity.
Well, I agree with you, but that's why I think we're in this group and not going on Sunday to St. Thomas of Aquinas Church.
And that's good. But I think that the charter that that Evan has embodied is primarily intellectual inquiry, wherever that leads.
Yeah, it's not related to Christianity or Jesus.
Right.
The mission of our group is.
I mean, it's accidental. I mean, it's not that he's. It's not that, like, I'm not excluded from the group. Yeah. I mean, you guys are all. You know, I feel no hostility. But that's. But
from this day forward, we're calling you Lewis a non-Christian.
But that's not my point. You can call me whatever you want. It's what
we used to call you the apostle. Now we're calling you the apostate.
It's what I call myself that counts.
Yeah,
I'm the apostate.
I'm amazed that you say not amazed. That's not the proper way of describing it, but that you've been depressed over.
Mildly
trying to figure out being a Christian, or depressed over being a Christian.
Yeah, well, and this is one respect where Evan can relate to me. Evan experienced a form of Christianity, and some of it had pretty scriptural grounding that was so oppressive that he sought to be totally free from it. True that?
Yes, true.
I mean, you've said that in the meetings on a couple of occasions. It's just amazing. I'm not trying to scapegoat Christianity, which would just be one more. I'd be creating one more prison house for myself. I'm just saying I want my focus to be the focus that got me excited for the first time in my life about something much bigger than myself. And that's the Jesus who healed people, loved people, rebuked people, and died, a martyr's death.
So,
and rose again. Otherwise, it's just a great story.
So Jesus, and I'm just trying to figure out what you're saying. Jesus, is Jesus also God, the Father, the Son?
I have written something on my webpage concerning that, which I'd like to refer you to. That would be a huge distraction to what I came to share tonight.
But is your Jesus God?
I would never reduce things grammatically to that statement.
That's pretty big.
I would feel as though I were doing an injustice to Jesus, to God the Father, and to the English language, and to the minds of my listeners, if I use that sentence, which is a very popular sentence these days. But there's no way I'm devoting my life to a peer, or
to appear
just another human being.
That's the Catholic Church developed the doctrine of the Trinity just so they don't have to say that sentence.
I didn't get to the Trinity yet. I'm just trying to go to God. Then I go to the Trinity.
Well, the whole point of the Trinity is so you never have to say the sentence, Jesus is God.
But Jesus is divine.
Well, so you can't, I mean...
But if Jesus is divine...
It's to kind of save the grammar from such reductionist
yeah.
terms like that.
And if Jesus wasn't God... If Jesus wasn't God, then what's the point? I mean, then we can all just sit and say, you know, he's a great healer, a great person, someone to be admired, but so was Buddha, so was Muhammad.
Anyway, I'd really rather not.
So I'm not going to get an answer out of you.
No, as I say, I've already written something. That doesn't interest me, though. Really, that discussion.
Doesn't interest me.
That discussion doesn't. Well, so you can. I'll send you the link, free of charge, to my article that I wrote, and you can get my opinion that way. But that doesn't interest me. That's not what excites me. The night I went to my first prayer meeting, my leading question wasn't, "Is Jesus God?"
All right, let me ask you a question.
I want to know if Jesus is real.
Who is Jesus?
All I can say is, get on your knees, read the New Testament. That's the only answer I could give. And it's the only reason I stayed a Christian for so long. Because I was, you know, I was getting a PhD in English. I was surrounded by very sophisticated forms of skepticism, you know, that weren't answered by C.S. Lewis, who was kind of the mainstay for, you know, reading Christians for a while. And I was surrounded by them, and I was seeing things chipped away. Even if I'd hide my head in the sand, I was still seeing things chipped away. But what I never felt like I had to relinquish was, I love the Gospels. You know, and there are sentences that bother me the way they bother Evan. I think they bother Evan a little more, but they do bother me. And there's things I don't understand, but the general picture, I love it.
I think if you and I were to highlight our favorite parts of the Gospels, we'd have like a complimentary...
You guys should do
it. We could.
The opposite path.
No, we could. Although I bet I would highlight a lot of it.
There would be some overlap.
There'd be, yeah, that Venn diagram would, you know, those circles would overlap. But you're right. And that's, I told Chris a long time ago, when I use the word Christian, and I still will call myself an American when I'm going through customs. but I, you know, I said to Chris, I said, you know, when I became a Christian, which now I'm just saying, when I got excited about learning about this Jesus, I left. Rebellion was something that I was exposed to in a very negative format. And rebellion was associated with just hatred of authorities, hatred of my parents, things like that. And so to me, rebellion was something kind of categorically negative. Whereas to Chris said, actually, you were converted to rebellion, not away from rebellion. Yeah. And so we just have different histories, which probably means we read the Gospels differently, too. And I can appreciate, you know, civil disobedience way more than I used to be able to. Because I was so scared of bad rebellion, I just thought everyone needed to step in line mindlessly. Mm-hmm. Even the bumper sticker question authority used to bother me.
I try to break one law a day.
You can't see? I feel like I succeeded as a parent because you try to break one law a day.
I don't want to run into you at the end of the year. the big laws are left to break. Like murder.
No, it gets repetitive.
You can break the same law every day.
Yeah, it's
boring. So I'm related, and I'm not asking this question in a way that it sounds like I'm challenging what you're saying, but just out of curiosity, if you're looking to the Gospels, the New Testament, as your source, how can you quantify that? How can you, like you two guys just said, you would highlight the parts that you like and throw away the rest, basically. How could you do that? How could you select certain portions of the gospel to be true and certain portions not to
Wasn't
be true?
Wasn't it Thomas Aquinas who did that?
No, Thomas Jefferson edited it.
Thomas Jefferson.
Took the miraculous parts out.
And the super stuff.
Which I've never seen a copy of. Well,
I get that too.
Dennis, I didn't say I would. I didn't say I would throw away the parts Chris highlighted. And
not
I
the
think
part you
I think by and large the Gospels and the Book of Acts are tremendously reliable. I've never felt like I needed to say I believe every word in the Bible is inerrantly divinely inspired. I've never felt a need to say that, even though the Christianity I grew up in admonished me to do that. But I do believe that the picture that emerges from the Gospels is a true picture. And parts that I don't understand or appreciate, I don't discard. I'm just not going to, you know, force myself or pretend that I do appreciate them or understand them.
So you,
I am not editing the New Testament.
So 100% of the Gospel is New Testament is accurate and correct.
I do not, as I just said, I've never felt a need to say that every word in the Bible or in the New Testament is inherently inspired by God, as though it's untranslated and there's no, you know, historical corruption through transmission, or that the writers never winked or nodded, you know, in the process of writing it. I'm just saying that in the main, it's the best thing I've ever read.
What's the best thing you ever read?
Sorrows of Young Werther by Goethe.
I think you
don't. But when you say that,
it can't compare to the Gospels.
Yeah.
If you read the Gospels, you're reading God. If you're reading Goethe, you're reading fiction.
Well, you're certainly reading something that claims to represent
right.
God.
Exactly.
Whereas
would,
great novels would do more for my imagination.
Yeah.
Shoot, that Animal Farm touched me more than the New Testament, than the crucifixion scene did when
yeah,
the horse
poor,
died.
Poor.
So things can have a much more emotional power. But I don't get out of bed thinking I've got to, you know, find Norwell or find the pigs or straighten out the pigs today.
What's his name, Boxer?
Boxer.
Boxer.
Yeah. May he rest in peace.
It's the most horrible part of any novel. Most touchingly depressing part.
Yeah.
I wish he rose from the dead.
Well, there are other things you can read with all sorts of things rising from the dead.
Thanks. We'll look into it.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for listening. And there's no one in this room I would not want to see again.
That's a strange thing to say.
But there's not. I mean, I think I'm going to see some of you less than I do, but I always want to see all of you.
Likewise.
I've seen Ted twice today.